Is that your Bruno Mars impression?
We finished the book.
Ooh. Hey, welcome. I should have said goo there. It would have made a lot more sense,
oh,
I think.
Oh, goo.
Goo.
Yeah.
hello, everybody listening. It's Game of Bones, as you know and love, hopefully. And if you don't love, ditch who you're with and get with us, because we have a lot of love between us, I think.
Yes. Look at your partner. Then look at us. Then look at your partner.
Old
then back
spy.
At us. We are not your partner.
Sadly,
but we can be.
Your partner isn't us, but he can be, or she. Not true. I just wanted to say to Micah, hi.
Hello, Zach. Good evening
you?
To you. I am under a blanket of snow here in the Northeast.
I'm going to say hello to Eric.
Hello, Zach.
Just saying hi to everyone.
It's the three of us. We survived that huge, huge upset at the Super Bowl there that happened on Sunday a couple days ago.
Sort of survived it.
I think it's safe to say that we've recovered, seeing as how we're not all Broncos.
Yeah, we're still alive, and our bodies have, I think, recovered from the calorie onset that happened on Sunday.
So much dip, let me tell
just,
you.
Just everything, you know? I love America. I love the time of the world that we live in, because we're reading a series and we just finished a book, A Clash of Kings, and you all know, you're listening, the world we live in where the food is it's like the Hunger Games, kind of like keep eating and just drink this shit and you'll throw it up. It's basically the same thing, except we don't throw it up. We just keep getting fatter.
Yes.
I don't know how to respond
to
that.
We are so privileged. We're like, who's the big fat? Well, you know, anybody of luxury, like Zarozo and Daxus, you know, Duck Sauce.
King Robert.
The show Zaro, though, you know what I'm saying?
Robert Baratheon. Yeah, well, the show's Zaro. Oh, you're right. I can't make that comparison. Robert. We're Robert Baratheon, guys.
Robert's a good comparison.
Really, a whore whenever we want one. A wife, in case we wanted one. Who really asks for those?
Who fucks her brother on the side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really one of those things. We're very fortunate to have all been able to catch the game, and we're fortunate to be able to read this book in the comfort of our own areas, as opposed to out in the woods surviving, having to kill squirrels and stuff, and all the things that these characters have had to do.
I thought you were going to compare to a real life person.
No, these characters over the past 800 pages have been
eating squirrels,
shot, stabbed, shadow babied.
That's a good verb. I like that.
They've yielded and welded and all sorts of random crap over the course of the last 800 pages. And really, I just have to say, you know, I feel really grateful that we didn't have to do near as much stuff. We just had to imagine what they were going through
and talk about it.
That's what
muscles.
Everything is. What is reality, people? What is it? What is this right now? No one knows what
love?
This is. Yeah, literally, what is love? And that's probably the whole point of this book, right? Trying to find out
love.
Who loves who. Not
it's all
really.
About love.
Trying to make a connection, but didn't happen.
You know, there is one thing, though, I will say for George R. R. Martin is that I don't think he would ever regret killing Ned Stark.
No, I agree. I mean, it's what it took to propel the story into its state now, and that was the whole, you know, that was the big part of starting this book, was learning the aftermath of that event.
You see what I did there, tying it to some other more recent information about other book series, but
Anyway,
I really, on this reread, enjoyed the book a lot more, because I was a big fan of A Game of Thrones, and I was a big fan of A Storm of Swords, and I felt like the book in between was just, it lacked, but upon rereading it, I really feel like there's a lot that goes on in this book, and I probably forgot some of it, because as you go from book to book, you don't quite remember everything, but you know, just going through it, you know, with two friends and all the listeners out there. So, that's what, five friends,
something like that.
Yeah, no, that was a joke. Come on, that was late. But
I thought it was a great joke.
Thank you, Eric didn't apparently.
No,
but that's okay. And you know, it's just it's different. You know, when you go through and you have, you know, two people who are reading it for the first time, and you have listeners out there who are a mixed bag in terms of some have read it before, some are reading it for the first time, you know, because they've only seen the TV show. It's cool to get all that interaction and the feedback, and they pick up on things that, you know, I might not have noticed. And I think it's just, it's a unique experience.
Yeah. I mean, you see all these environments that only some of them, only a fraction of, have ever been realized on screen. And really, it just makes you appreciate the depth that words can take you to. You know, it's these places that are in this book. And this is only in, you know, the second book. This has nothing to do with the five books that there will eventually be, or the three books that yet remain. It's just there's so much open that's yet to happen that we know has been written down, or is about to be written down. And that's really the exciting part, kind of, is knowing that there is so much more yet to come. So we're able to like appreciate the book for what it is, but at the same time, we can go on then after this, if that makes sense. It's just kind of,
it does.
Yeah. I think knowing there's more allows us to appreciate this one more. I don't know. I didn't feel like rushed at any point. I felt like it was the right pace to read the pace that we took. But it's kind of invigorating to know that these cliffhangers that all of it's on will be answered and will be resolved, and that we don't necessarily have to wait years and years and years for.
Well, some of them might. I'm being completely honest, I think the best place to start, as we kind of go through and look at some of the major plot points and events that took place throughout the course of A Clash of Kings, is there's this tweet, and I don't know who it's from, and I'm going to be paraphrasing it, but I remember seeing it. This is probably a couple weeks back, or maybe it was even a comment on winterscoming.net, and it was almost whomever this person was trying to point something out. And it was along the lines of, you know, first chapter, last chapter, think about it. And the more and more I did this, the more and more I came to the realization, and I'm sure a lot of listeners and a lot of readers have picked up on this already, but what I think that they were trying to get at is there's a very strong parallel between what happens in the first and last chapters of not just A Clash of Kings, but other books in this series. And it made me think and think and think. I'm trying to go. I'm like, wait, okay, I got it, right? And it all boils down to Maester Cressen and Maester Luwin. And Maester dies in the first chapter, and Maester dies in the final chapter.
Oh, look at that.
So that's my intellectual thought for the show. It was provided by some person who I can't remember their name. They were trying to push me along in that direction. I finally – and. Even though it's not exactly, you know, sort of linear or parallel with what happens in a Game of Thrones, but if you think about it, really what happens there is you have a major beheading at the end of the book, and then the first chapter of a Game of Thrones, you obviously have a beheading by Ned. Or actually, it's the second chapter, isn't it?
Well, the Hand of the King dies in both, right? We're assuming that while those guys are north of the wall in the prologue of book one, John Arryn is off in a bed dying.
Yeah, so I couldn't exactly tie those loose ends together.
Yeah.
But because, as we've mentioned many times, the final chapter of A Game of Thrones is, of course, Dany.
With her dragons.
But if you want to tie in the White Walkers and the dragons kind of together as one magical community, then I guess you do have parallels there. I'm sure there's things that we're missing because it's been a while since we've read the book. But, you know, if listeners out there have those parallels, definitely be sure to send them in. But I thought that was really cool, and I'm going to have to go back and take a look at a Storm of Swords and some of the other books and see exactly if those parallels do exist. So I just thought it's neat.
Just to be sure, let's do a Game of Thrones again, guys. What do you say?
Just to be sure.
We could just go back and listen to all of our old episodes.
Looking back over just book two, you realize how much more magical it really was. Everything from the comet at the very, very beginning with the poison and Melisandre's kind of red god that she was worshiping, Stannis' potential anointship. You know, his thing that turned him into the Lord of Lightbringer or whatever. You know, Shadow Babies. What am I forgetting? Warging, you know, Bran can warg, and now Jon Snow can warg. Dany still has her dragons, and they're growing.
The House of the Undying. So much, don't forget that.
So much magic, and it was hinted at in the first book. Of course, there was a little bit of magic, and it was said that it was coming back into the world. But we kind of got the next level of that, and he really didn't shy away from the magic, which is what I really like. Is I was surprised with how many of these chapters characters you wouldn't expect are using magic or having magic done around them. Catelyn is privy to a number of creepy things. And it's just a really, really kind of cool how it's political, yes, and it's about these characters that live in this medieval age, yes, but it's just the right ounce of that fantastical that allows you to kind of set aside what you think you know about how things are going to go, because something really, really awesome could shake it up.
And I love the way it was done, because, you know, going into this story, dragons aside, there's not much of a giveaway that bigger and crazier things are happening, because, you know, the whole idea of magic, if we could sum it into one word, which is a pretty dumb word if you think about it, because it could be anything. It could be to do with the cosmos. It could be to do with an actual god. I mean, who knows? Like, it's mm-hmm. it could be nature. We really don't know, but we'll call it magic or science, because whatever. Anyway, mm-hmm. long story short, it's sort of like shaken off as a joke. We hear stories and old Nan, and it's a laugh, essentially, in the first book. And in the second one, I remember being skeptical going into almost every situation in every chapter, because I just assumed there was a way to explain it. Even the fire climber, you know, with Danny and Karth, and it's just little things. It should have been a giveaway that Danny's stuff at the end of A Game of Thrones happened that way, but still, even the TV show, the warging and stuff, I feel like it's kind of a surprise, because it didn't really edge into it as smoothly as the books have. But in A Clash of Kings, the entire book is almost your transition into what's next, like the pivot into the rest of the story. It's just a slow winding process through very real events in this weird feudal society where people are getting sliced with swords, and we're getting very raw descriptions of how they die and how they shit and how they eat and how they sleep together. You know, this is very raw, not very majestical, but at the end of the day, someone is birthing a shadow person that's going and assassinating someone. You know, at the end of the day, X and Y is happening. So I just really think it was a really creative way to edge in this element that is present in most stories that are like this, except it didn't just start out with, you know, I remember reading some story when I was a kid and I was younger. The king was like going outside and playing in the courtyard or something, and it was explaining how magic works in their kingdom and in the world, and he was just like tugging at the strings or whatever in the air, and it's like, oh cool, there's magic, so this whole story is going to be nuts. Who even knows? But in this series, you don't really see it that way, and I think that's why it's friendly to a lot of people. You know, it's very real.
Mm-hmm. It's so spread out too, and we don't know what's going on, but it's just too complex. Like, Jack and Hagar can change his face. Oh, he's an assassin who can change his face. That's really weird. When is that going to come into play again? We don't know, but we have a feeling that it will, that this is something that can happen in this world. And dragons are something that can happen in this world. And shadow babies are something that can happen in this world. This is unbelievable. There seems to be no limits. He's still in like the introductory phase of introducing the various aspects of magic. We're far from understanding any particular one of them. And furthermore, at the end of after book three, we continue to get a whole new host of characters too, of people to deal with. And so, you know, from what I understand. So it's just unbelievable that he's on this info dump mode, and he still manages to turn these chapters that are so poetic and ironic, like Tyrion's chapters, and that they mean so much to us, and that these characters are so real and dramatically portrayed in a way that engrosses us into reading more about them. It's just all really a triumph of a book, and it's not too hard to get into. It's not too hard to read.
I agree with you, and I think that you have this rebirth of magic, and it's interesting in the sense that it seems to lack very much in King's Landing in some areas that would be considered, you know, maybe like the Midwest, even though it's not really the Midwest, like central and southern parts of Westeros. But then as you go east, I feel like magic has always been there, and it still exists there. And, you know, there's sort of this really intriguing element about the east where Dany is. But now you're seeing the north and really beyond the wall starting to come alive with this magic again as well. And there's always been this sense that there's something in the north, there's something special about it. And you have these non-believers in King's Landing, right? The Lannisters are not willing to really accept the fact that White Walkers may have returned or dragons are out in the east. And you know, we've mentioned this on the show before. It's almost like because they don't want to lend any credence to this, it's going to come back and really bite them in the ass. It's like one of those movies where you always have somebody who's telling the president or some really high powered leader the danger that's associated with whatever's happening, and they just don't want to believe it. And then finally it happens, and then you want to smack them upside the head. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no,
I feel
like
there's
that.
A little bit of that with the Lannisters, until the point where either dragons descend upon King's Landing or the White Walkers have marched so far south because they are able to, and it's cold enough that, you know, only when it's right at their door, they finally going to awaken to the fact that, hey, everybody who's fighting here, they might need to work together against something that's far more powerful than themselves.
You know what it reminds me of? Cornelius Fudge.
Lord of the Rings.
Not listening. Yeah. About yeah. Boldy thing. You know what I'm saying?
He's back.
Exactly like that.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem real in a way. And it's the same thing with, you're right, Cornelius Fudge in the Potter series with Voldemort. He doesn't want to believe he's back. And I feel like that's the case here. And it's going to be interesting to really see how this all plays itself out over the course of the next several books, and who will become a believer, who will find out the truth too late. It's always kind of fun to watch that stuff play itself out.
Do you think that we were talking very early on in reading the book that Renly was pretty much our favorite heir or our favorite successor to Robert, and that ended, that escalated quickly and ended. I mean, who is really our favorite heir or contender for the throne now, ending this book?
I mean, for me, it's Rob, hands down.
Oh, yeah? Really?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he carries on Ned's legacy as well as he can for being so young, and the North have a pretty noble cause and a noble purpose, and I think that they're pretty flexible, considering that if worst comes to worst or shit comes to shit, I think that they'll make a deal with anyone other than the Lannisters.
It is really odd, Rob not being a point of view character, to that you side with Rob, you know, after having read the book, because you know what he's up to. Like, and that's cool, and we do too. But with that, like, I kind of need that helping hand where it's like, yeah, he's charismatic. He has all the good scenes. You know, he just talks about avenging his father. But to me, he's like so in the background that I'm just like, oh, yeah, I forgot he was a contender there for a minute.
I'd say what's weirder than that, though, is that none of these kings are point of view characters.
Yeah.
Wow.
So there.
You blew my mind.
None of them. Not Stannis, not Joffrey, not Robb, not Balin. And George has said, I think in interviews, that he would have liked to have written from Robb's perspective at one point or another. It's just, I think it's unique. Because what's so great about that is he's such a major character. All of them are, really. But yet we've not seen from any one of their perspectives. We've always seen from those who are closest to them or just happen to be around them what the perspective is on those particular characters.
That's a fascinating trick.
Yeah. It's got to be a pain in the ass to write, too.
Or is it much easier? Because all that
or much easier, yeah.
And you can just explore what Catelyn's seeing as she rides. And you know what I mean? Like, oh, there's his men. Oh, there he is. I wonder what he's talking about. Let's listen in for a brief conversation. All right, that's a chip of the iceberg. But luckily, the iceberg will not have to be written because Catelyn's going upstairs to look at Ned's bones.
One question, though, that I had for the two of you is, we got introduced to a number of new characters in this book, or we came more face to face with some of them and only heard of them in passing in the first book. But really, as it relates to the television show, having been introduced to these characters and spent more time with them than really you have in the TV show, you know, thinking back even to the first couple of Davos chapters and the prologue, you had Shireen and Selyse Baratheon, and as well as several other characters, Patchface at Dragonstone. You had Jojen and Mira Reed be introduced in this book.
Right.
And just curious, do you think it was good, not good, you know, compared to what you saw on TV and already having been a season ahead of where this book is?
Look, I like that Jojen and Mira were involved, and that Bran's storyline happens quicker. That kind of, I don't know, it fits for me, but in terms of new characters, I thought you were going to ask like who our favorite new character is, but I just wanted to say, like, overall, I think I'm most interested in continuing to see Melisandre and Stannis and Davos and that crowd, because kind of sticking with the Baratheon line here, and I think it's easy to say Dany's going to come and kill them all. It's really easy to, like, root for her, because I think she really has the capability, or she has enough people around her where it seems likely, at least with dragons, that she's going to have this huge tactical advantage over everybody else. But with Stannis, he's really involved in this religion that we know next to nothing about. And considering how much religion there was in this book and magic and stuff like that, we don't know yet, you know, still all about all the resurrections and things that the Lord of Light does. So I'm just, and really the shadow baby or
say
creature,
it.
No, the shadow creature, there's no explanation for that. There's no real resolution. It happens, and it's probably the biggest WTF moment in terms of, okay, actually what just actually happened. So I think that that was compelling enough to be like something that I enjoyed seeing on the TV, but even in the book, it was like bigger, I think.
Yeah, it was bigger.
You know, one thing that stood out to me though, and I know Brian Cogman mentioned this when he was on the show, is that, you know, they didn't really want to introduce Selyse because she's really another, you know, lesser version of Melisandre, and to kind of have an additional character who, you know, is championing this religion. But we see in this book that, you know, she actually plays a very big role in her husband getting involved in this in the first place. And I think for somebody who, you know, is such a stoic character and is just really more concerned about his duty than he is about his family, that for him to really take to something that his wife supports first and foremost is an interesting attribute for somebody like Stannis.
Husbands, you know, if the wife says it's okay, it's okay.
Yeah, so I found that to be pretty interesting. And, you know, we've talked through a lot of the changes from the show, and clearly Arya's time at Harrenhal is a major one. The fact that Tywin Lannister is never there he is very briefly, but there's not the same relationship clearly that Arya has in the series, and I think led to a lot of great moments between those two actors.
Yeah, if we're talking about moments I'm happy about on the show, then that's one of them. Everybody knows I like that actor. I like Tywin in the show, and I'm grateful for that change, just because it just made it more interesting, I think, in the show than it is in the book.
It certainly put a little edge on what happened at King's Landing, because we have a person that Tywin is, and we're speaking with him, and we know that he's geographically separated from what's happening down there. So in the books, it was kind of like Tywin marched. This is happening. There really wasn't any hint that he was going to make it there, but I feel like there was more of a chance, you know, and the same thing happened in the show, but, you know, there's a lot less text and a lot less sub story to pick up on. So it was crucial for the reader's development on kind of getting a little suspicious of the Boltons. And I think that George's Bolton discovery, what George meant to do with the Boltons, was a much larger part in the book than they made it in the show. You know, they just kind of had Roose Bolton kind of being a dick, and they had Ramsay also doing the same. And what happened at the Red Wedding and what people find out with Ramsay was paced differently. But in the book, they really set it up. Like, they want it to be bold.
Well, I think it's a lot easier to drop hints in, you know, several hundred pages of text than it is maybe in a 60-minute
that could be fair
TV show, but not always true. And yeah, I think we've spent a lot of time, obviously, in the last several chapters talking about Bran and talking about Jon, and maybe not as much Arya, but definitely those two. And Eric is, you know, just dumbfounded on this revelation of Jon being able to warg. Maybe not as well at this point as Bran, but certainly his ability to do so. And we've even seen glimpses of Arya being able to at least tap into the mind of her direwolf. So the more that we progress in the series, the more that we're realizing that there is a very close relationship here, and interested to see what it gets used for moving forward.
The Stark children are just slowly becoming animals.
Yes. Something like that.
It's a very separated story, though. You know, we learned so much about what's happening with the forces in the South and how they're dealing with their own troubles and how they're dealing with the post Ned Stark world. And that's rough. You know, we've got important shit to figure out, like who's marrying who, who's going where, that kind of stuff, you know, very, very important stuff. And then on the other hand, you've got the Wall and you've got all of the men of the Night's Watch. You've got Cornhappen, you've got Jon Snow, you've got Ghost, you've got Sam, and there's a lot of stuff happening. You know, we've got Craster's Keep. There's so much that is so important, but not really that important to all these people that really consider themselves great. You know what I mean? All of these people who are very confident in their own abilities and knowledges, we get to be the overlords that see what really is happening. And I just think it's so interesting that, Michael, what you said earlier with the East having so much of a magical aspect, which we got to see so much of with Dany starting out, you know, post-dragon situation with her very, very much smaller group of people following the comet, finding the mysterious city, Vias Tolordo, if you put the little on the R. And there's just so much happening, but that's in a place that is cut off from this, I guess they could consider it civilized area, being Westeros. And then you've got north of the Wall, which is very uncivilized and untouched by these civilized people who have kind of destroyed everything in their wake, I'm assuming, over the past centuries. And so you've got untouched in the north, relatively. I mean, this is from the knowledge of someone who's been through two books. And then you've got the east that's still very wild in a sense, very connected spiritually to things. Reminds me of, you know, the Gerudos in Zelda. That's the only one in the episode.
And even characters who didn't necessarily go anywhere. You know, like Littlefinger, heck, he had a field trip. But Sansa stayed in King's Landing the whole time and tried to get out of King's Landing. But at the end of the book, she's exactly where she was the last book, except character-wise, she's evolved, you know, a little bit. But she didn't really go anywhere, but she still had captivating chapters.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, she was the other side of King's Landing that we didn't get to see. And we got to see Tyrion's mechanic, and we got to see Sansa's mechanic.
And Cersei, you know, and again, that was embellished a little bit better in the TV show, I thought, a little bit. But during the Battle of Blackwater, which, again, in the book, six whole chapters, or seven, I think it was.
Yeah, we forget that happened.
Never happened.
It was a huge part of this book.
Yeah, major part of the series. It's a massive turning point, much like Renly's death was a massive turning point. And you know, as I'm kind of looking over some of the summary here for this book, I mean, I completely forgot. You know, this is the book where you know we lose Yoren and Greenhands.
Yeah, dude,
everything that went on
Mommy
with Arya.
Yielded.
Doesn't it feel like a different time? I just you mentioned Maester Cressa at the beginning of the episode, and I was like, "Holy crap! What?
He lives on in our memory."
That's so long ago, but I mean, that's how long the book is. That's how much stuff is in it. This is just number two, guys. Number two.
Yeah, I mean, I really look at character development, and you know, Tyrion, Zach, you just mentioned him, and I just think about how much he really grew into the role as Hand of the King, and he did everything in his power to protect King's Landing. And then Arya, how she's grown and she's become ruthless. I mean, from fighting alongside Yoren to, you know, what she was able to orchestrate at Harrenhal in order to escape, and not being able to not only give Jack and Hygar or be afraid to give him those three names, but to then kill somebody en route to her escape from there. You know, the fact that, you know, there's just so many characters that develop. Theon becomes a grade A douchebag throughout the course of this book.
He goes back and sees his father. That was huge.
Sees and all his sister after he felt her up.
You know, I think that the fact he got to see all these people he grew up with, his uncle or whatever, and people that, you know, he actually chose his heritage over his you know, new family and betrayed the Starks, and that was huge. That was no less an important point of the plot, because now the North is so screwed up with everybody in different places and no Starks at home.
Nobody's home.
So it really just runs the gamut of all the different types of situations, and I hope that every book is even more busy with interesting things happening. And I just wonder, you know, can George keep up the excitement for yet another book? And of course, everybody says book three is like the coolest. So yeah, I think he probably can. Like, just knowing,
I mean, it has its place. And I think just anyway, you know, we talked a little bit about new characters earlier as well. And, you know, two of the ones that kind of skipped my mind and really an introduction to a place that we hadn't been previously, only heard about it and only see it in season three, is River Run, and, you know, meeting the Tullys, meeting Ed Beer, meeting Blackfish, and meeting Sir Hoster Tully, even though he's on his deathbed. I mean, there's a whole new family, really, that's introduced, even though Catelyn is a part of it. And, you know, as we move forward into A Storm of Swords, it's going to be, you know, a lot of fun to see how all those relationships play themselves out. And we know that we've left Catelyn with a sword in her hand, about to attack Jaime Lannister. Who knows?
Yeah, right. He's gonna cut off his hand
or something.
Yeah, I actually saw it. It was on display at the exhibition.
There you go.
But
was it gorgeous?
I mean, a lot of characters are left in limbo, I feel like. I mean, Tyrion is in a bit of a predicament himself, and Jaime, we're not sure his fate. Theon, we're not sure his fate. And I'm sure there's a few others here that I'm forgetting, but you know, we're heading in now to this third book with so many questions to be answered, and those are just ones that have come about in this book. I mean, there are probably many from the first book that still haven't been answered.
I'm just thinking about Dany and how you were just saying all these people were left in limbo, and I was going to give her my own of the entire book.
Ooh.
I was going to say what she did in the House of the Undying was complex and substantial bravery, and that's the truth, because I'm thinking about myself being in that situation, and I'm confident that I would have just walked in there and seen what happened as well, but still, she did it, and that's cray, you know, and it could go to Jorah, and it could go to all of them, really. They kicked a lot of ass in Qarth against a lot of odds, and their situation is a lot different than everybody else, because it's good. They've got strong Bellas, they've got Arson Whitebeard, who knows? We got ships, we'll make shit happen. Let's see what we can do together. But I'm going to have to give my own of the book to Arya Stark for her incredible, incredible just masterminding of the entire fortress of Harrenhal. You know, she got shit done, and she's a small kid, very small kid, and she made it all happen. She was the weasel in the weasel soup. You know, she was the person that got them out of this fortified place, and that's only part of it. She did a lot of things there that kept her alive and that kept her friends alive and that will eventually lead to their freedom and to who knows what else. But yeah, she did it. Not to be brief, but that's it.
Man, I cannot believe we're here. Own of the book. This is like it's so much more massive, though, than Own of the Season, because it's like 10 episodes versus 80 chapters. I don't want to get it like wrong, and I certainly wasn't.
Did
like,
I do okay?
Track,
I was
like,
nervous as hell.
I have to go through like
that was
all
great.
These, maybe go through all the episodes.
Eric,
done
there's
the
no
chapters.
There's no wrong Own.
There's no wrong Own.
Unless it's wrong, then they'll tell you on Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah, right.
You just can't give it to any of the point of view characters.
Oh, God.
Oh,
that limits
no!
It down. Maester Crescent.
No, you can. I mean, this is overall,
you're
I think.
You're turning my point of view rule against me. And
I think
finally,
any character
give it to Rob.
Sense.
I'm saying he's not point of view.
No, you know what? I'm not. I'm going to give
none
an
of the
own
kinks
to
are. Remember that.
I'm going to give my own to a non-point of view character. You ready?
We're ready, yeah.
Ghost.
Okay. Four. I see where you're going with this.
You see where I'm going? You want to fill in the blanks here? You want to fill in the blanks?
I could. Does it have something to do with something sharp and something shiny?
It does.
You
it
finish
does.
It.
It does. Okay, Ghost uncovers the weaponry that will one day be used on a White Walker, as well as a number. He keeps Jon Snow alive, keeps all the Rangers alive as long as he can. And in terms of like companionship and additionally, you know, getting John to the point where he needs to be warging wise, I really feel that Ghost is an important part of John's chapter. And of course, he goes along with them on all their hunts and all their, you know, scavenges and all that stuff. I mean, talk about a Stark, though, who has the direwolf by their side. You know, there's Bran, but he's kind of cooped up all book. But then there's John, and he's traversing the terrain and making shit happen. And really, it's all because of Ghost that he's able to, I think, excel at everything he does. So own to the pup, own to the albino dog.
That's a good own. Ghost is a good
I like
own.
That.
Have good, yeah, good luck good. Following those two up, Micah. See what you got.
Well,
Arya and Ghost are the MVPs.
I'm going to have to go with Tyrion. And I guess I have to give some reasoning for that.
I was just going to say Tyrion. All right, everybody, thank you for your comments. Moving on.
Is it because of Blackwater?
Show's over. I think it's more than just for Blackwater. I think that just his ability to come in at the beginning of the book and really just set the tone in King's Landing. I mean, you go back to everything that he was able to do. You know, he cleaned up and he sent people he didn't like either over the sides of boats or up to the wall. And you look at just how he was a great tactician. He orchestrated Blackwater, defeated Stannis, and you know, with obviously some help from a late arriving cavalry led by his father and the Tyrells. But I think that he was able to do enough to hold them and to allow his father to come in and finish them off. And I just look at things like sending Myrcella off to Dorne, protecting Tommen, even protecting Joffrey when it came down to it, and being the only one man enough to storm out there and actually take on Stannis' men, you know, when the Hound was a little bitch. So when you couple all of that together, you know, from the very beginning of this book all the way through to the end, even when he's lying in that bed, you know, he protected his family way more than anybody else. You can make an argument for Tywin, but I think he did the most for the Lannisters, and he's the reason why at the end of this book they're still safely in King's Landing and things are returning, you know, slowly to some kind of sense of normalcy.
Yeah.
And for me, that's why he gets the own of the book.
And furthermore, what does he have to show for it? I mean, he lost his nose.
Yeah.
Yep. And he's not even the worst of all the Lannisters, but you're right. He's the reason they're on top.
God, this makes me just so mad thinking about it. Just Tyrion's final chapter in this book and what he was going through and how the Lannisters have just sat him to the side because of the way he looks. It's just, I mean, I understand that that's the context of this story. And that's okay because, I mean, let's not talk about the treatment of women. That's a whole other topic. But the way he, and I just don't get it because, okay, he's a half man or whatever. Fine. Okay, he's got some problems with his beatific aesthetics. Fine. What is natural beauty anyway, right? But in all seriousness, like, you're going to give Cersei favor over Tyrion. Tyrion is a sharp dude. And he made a lot of stuff happen. And you're just going to lock him away? You're going to give Bronn? You're going to give him a knight? You're going to knight Bronn, you know, Sir Bronn. I mean, Bronn's a badass. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, and that's a good own, Mikey, because it's damn right, you know, and it sucks. So at least he gets the own.
You know where he looks good, though, Tyrion? He looks good. He looks happy. Displayed on our Facebook wall.
Oh, yeah.
He does.
I saw you change that one day, and I was just like, you know what? That is very fitting, sir.
I mean, if you go from Robert Baratheon busting at the seams on his armor to Tyrion drunk off his ass at his own wedding.
Oh, you changed Robert Baratheon. Aww.
It's still on our Twitter. Look. It's still on our Twitter.
Too soon. That's where I saw it.
It's,
I was like,
it's
man,
way past like... due. What do you mean it's too soon? But
yeah.
The reason
that I like it.
The reason I did transition to Facebook was we did get several comments there related to people's owns of the book, and thought we'd read a few of them.
Yes, and where better to start than Jason Snodgrass?
Yes.
Where better?
Who agrees with me for the most part.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jason says, Tyrion owning Janna Slynt. Uh-huh. That is easily one of my favorite parts of the book. He wines him, dines him, and 86s him back to the wall.
Yeah. Dude, Jason Snodgrass.
In particular... Janna Slynt, yeah, I remember that scene now that it's pointed out, and that was one of the finest moments of
and
taking
it was
advantage,
in the show too, yeah.
Yeah, taking advantage of someone's drunkenness to get complacency out of them.
He's sipping a martini in his profile pic too, so you know he's cool. Like, you know he's a smart dude. Look at him.
Just remember that I thought you were talking
Jason
about
Snodgrass.
Janna Slynt.
No, he's sipping a martini.
Yeah, that's pretty badass. I would just say remember the fact that Janna Slynt is headed to the wall, and you know, he had a pretty major role in the death of one Eddard Stark.
Listen, I haven't forgotten he's going to the wall, right? I've been thinking about that every day since it happened. All right. What's going to happen when he gets
there? He tattooed it on himself just so he wouldn't forget.
I did, on my wrist. Yeah.
There's a backslash on his knee for a slant.
All right, I'll read the next one from Marla Jo Kelly, who's in a play in her profile photo. She says, snack-related injuries can be epic and catastrophic, referring to what we wrote, but also hilarious. Can't wait for the next ep to hear the tale. Heal quickly, good team. I just realized that wasn't a known. But
that was not known.
I read it. My bad, everybody. Marla, thank you for your comment. Anyway.
Yeah, thank you, Marla. But yeah. We did get another own from Kurt Pop, who appears to be a very big Toronto Maple Leafs fan based on his profile pictures.
Now we're analyzing our listeners' profile pictures.
Why not? He says, Arya gets my own for not only surviving Harrenhal, but making it her bitch.
Oh, I completely agree. Nice job, Kurt Pop. And go Maple Leafs.
Yes, and following that, we have James Bond, a.k.a. Andrew May, bow tie, suit.
Yeah, nice little tuxedo there.
Love it, who says, own of the book. Has to be Tyrion finding out which of Varys Littlefinger or Pycelle is the rat with his misinformation game.
That's good.
Yeah, yeah. I like that.
That was really good. That allowed him the tools to proceed.
Yeah.
Good on
him being that great tactician.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's a quote from Guile Kokinos, who says, this is a quote.
Street Fighter.
The stone is strong, Bran told himself. The roots of the trees go deep. We just read this recently. And under the ground, the kings of winter sit their thrones. So long as those remained, Winterfell remained. It was not dead, just broken. Like me, he thought. I'm not dead either. Bran owns a clash of kings with these final words. Excellent strategy using Summer and Shaggy to lead his captors astray. Mastering warging all alone in the dark. Being totally badass with determination. Brandon Stark of Winterfell lives.
Lives. Another right. day. I was going to give my own to Bran like earlier today. I changed my mind, but this was why too. So I love your own.
All right. And the final own comes from Leslie Dingledine, our good friend, who is in her. Well, hold on a second. So her profile picture is with her dog and then her. Cover photo appears to be with her husband. Recently married a few months ago, right?
Yes. Yeah, boys. Yes. She's married. Hands off.
She was
off,
one to listen to us on
listeners.
The wedding day. Hands off.
She goes on to say, firstly, the above photo is adorbs. I feel like James Earl Jones in that commercial.
Totes adorbs.
OMG.
Secondly, own of Clash of Kings goes to Tyrion Lannister? I don't know. Why is it a question mark? Yes, I think so. I should have said Tyrion Lannister. Yes, I think so. No one can outwit him. Heck, they couldn't even kill him. Fans love him. His family hates him. He's the only Lannister doing any good at King's Landing, and his plotline is one of my most looked forward to.
Fair enough.
Like
That's
it.
A good summary of Tyrion.
Should I leave my own here on the wall?
Yeah.
You too late.
It's too late. I'm sorry.
We locked the thread. No All right.
So if you'd like to leave us your owns of A Clash of Kings, you can do so by scrolling on our wall, facebook.com/gameofowns.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is a wall that you can't scroll upon, but you can hire a bird to fly onto it. That's my
on
transition.
Twitter, Will Gazzorni, coolest name, says,
great profile pick, AP, all day.
Ultimate own goes to the Half-Hand for sacrificing himself for the benefit of the Watch. Yes, how many Watchmen don't live up to their oath? And yet, this one did.
Rest in peace, Half-Hand.
Jen Wyman, sympathetic, holding a little balloon, I think it is, in that profile picture.
It'll never end.
Jen Wyman says, own for A Clash of Kings goes to Sansa. Hey, here you go. For surviving her engagement to Joffrey.
It's a good one.
Yeah, I like that. Very succinct. Here's an own of Clash of Kings from Ida Oskwolf from another country. Which might as well be another world. She says, my own for Clash of Kings is Arya naming Jaqen as the third name, which is just a super flippant and cheeky thing to do. Hashtag Gorya or Goarya if you don't want to be cheeky. Also, she says, all right, wait, hold on. When Jaime is wondering out loud whether Brienne is a man or a woman, which is just super hilarious. Hashtag androgyny. I would agree. That is so funny and very well done in the show as well. I cackled like a hyena from The Lion King.
You did? Or she did.
I did from the when I heard it the first time on the show. I was like, they should be in a sitcom anyway, or at least a Super Bowl commercial.
And the Lady Ash, who sounds ominous, but really is just a ginger kitty at heart with a smiley face. Betrayal owned this book. Stannis to Renly, Theon to Robb, Ramsay to Theon. This book left us to trust no one's word.
I trust Jorah.
Yep.
I do trust Jorah.
Mm-hmm.
You do?
I do.
Really?
I trust all of the Mormonts.
What do you mean, really? Stop. I'll stop trusting him. Stop saying that.
No. I just like messing around. I trust Scott Glennon, who says, Arya, not for Jaqen, but for Weasel Soup. Hashtag go Arya.
Hmm. There's another go Arya hashtag. That's awesome.
How about Yonatan Alexander?
How about it?
He says, and by the way, he has a White Walker, the head chieftain of the White Walkers, as his profile picture.
Very
slash
ominous.
Avatar. He says, the own for Clash of Kings? Probably House Stark. Taking George R. R. Martin's many punches, yet still standing strong. In parentheses, last chapter illustrates this.
I tend to agree.
Well, you know, we do collect owns, but also we don't mind when you tell us what's going on in your life. Here's an example of that as we transition away from our owns of the book.
You were going to say season.
This one is from Fran Shizzle, who says...
My nizzle.
My coworker just ran to me and asked, why the fuck did Theon kill Brandon Rickon?
Where do you work?
And what did he say?
LOL, hashtag brand new reader, hashtag now hates George R. R. Martin at Game of Thrones, at Game of Thrones.
Well.
Fran Shizzle, Manizzle, we need some more story rizzle. Tell us what happened next.
Yeah, and keep the hip hop out of it, or Eric will do that again.
Yeah. Anyway, nothing like three white guys trying to sound hip.
Right.
Eric has mentioned the various forms for you to be able to contact us. And I just like to add, though, that one way you can leave us your feedback in a different medium is by heading on over to iTunes and leaving us a rate and review. And there haven't been any yet for the month of February. We're a couple days into the month, but would like to remind all of you out there that nothing less than 5 stars is acceptable in the month of February. It's the shortest month, therefore, well, nothing really. I mean,
hey now.
What?
Relax on February, man. This is my coveted name day month. I love this. Uh-huh. This is like, I enjoy it. It's short. It's cold. There's snow on the ground. It's good to be an Aquarian.
Looking forward to reading your reviews on iTunes a little bit later on in the week.
And can we just say that it has been a fascinating ride through this book? And really, honestly, this recording of this last episode has been a blast, I know, for me personally, because it's really good. I mean, we didn't plan any of this. It was just very fun recounting the story with Micah and Eric. And I really look forward to going into A Storm of Swords, because having the experience and knowledge of doing these two things before, and then to end it all with a nice handful of your book owns has really, really put the icing on this book properly for me. So I'm feel very confident moving forward, guys. I really do.
Yep.
Now I have to put this book back in that little paper
box
that I have. It's going to be difficult to fit it all back in.
What's a paper box? Exactly.
It's a paper box. It's paper. You would think that it would be cardboard or something more sturdy, but I don't know. I've gotten the cheapest box.
Kindergarten art class, make a box, kids.
Yeah, it's pretty much that. It's exactly as sturdy as that and not any less sturdy.
If you actually have the hardcover versions, you could probably do physical damage to another human being. or lift it as – see, now I need to go lift actual weights instead of just doing free weights with the Clash of Kings.
We know that the body count, was that great photo of the body count in all of the Game of Thrones books, but I really wonder like what the body count is for people having been like had a Game of Thrones book dropped on them.
I think that about wraps up this first episode of the week. I don't even know what day to call it at this point, but it's the first episode.
I'm gluing my pages shut in Clash of Kings. I will not reopen this book.
It's all over, people. It's all
but
gone.
But I will leave you both with this as we head to A Storm of Swords at some point in the near future. Instead of just talking to Samwell Tarly on this show, Eric, I know you like that a lot, you actually get a chance to go inside his mind as he becomes a point-of-view character.
What?
Perspectives
Mikey,
are going to change.
You know how to whet the appetite.
All of this stuff and more. That's Micah.
That's Zach.
And that's Eric. That was better. We'll see everybody sometime later in the week.
That was the second time we did that, people. You should have heard the first one.
They probably will.
Yeah, you're right. I have my way.
Hey, goodbye. The music.
Good things coming twos. Second book. Over. Done with.
Bye.
That's Zach.
And that's Eric.
It always ends up with Eric being last. We keep balonies in our pants.
We got to find a better way to throw that back and forth to each other. We just sounded so enthusiastic to say each other's names.
I did. I was really into it.
You did, yes.
Say my name.
All right, let's do it again. All right, ready?